We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
The New Orleans Pelicans select Zion Williamson.
And what a dribble penetration. So tough going to the goal.
High up on the rim to rip it down.
Welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Dua and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time.
Welcome to In the Know, brought to you by Brooke Linen, which is for linen sheets. Mason Ginsburg, how are you, my friend? It has been an all-star break in which the all-star game happened to many people's surprise, disappointment, whatever it happened. How have you been? Did you enjoy your time off from basketball?
Yeah, I didn't watch anything from the All-Star festivities. I took a little time away from hoops as well. What about you, though? You had a birthday, huh?
My birthday was...
probably since the last time we recorded.
It was February 23rd, which is 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago?
No, so I guess we did record one, maybe. I don't know. We definitely recorded it was,
my birthday was uneventful. What happened on my birthday? I think the Pelicans won. I don't know. I could be wrong. Whatever. Irrelevant, but first half of the season in the books, Pelicans are 15-21. They dropped two on their way out. Zion did not play in that final game against the Miami Heat. The Pelicans did not look like a good basketball team without him on the floor. Speaking of the Miami Heat, there's a player, Myers Leonard, who was in the news as of yesterday and today. He was live streaming a game, a war zone, probably irrelevant. Someone, I guess, sniped him. Did something happened, causing an outburst in which he unleashed an anti-Semitic slur very clearly on camera. And so far, I mean, there's been a lot of reactions to this. The NBA has decided to fine him $50,000. He's been suspended for 1 week. He gets all his pay. It's a suspension with pay, because he's not playing in any games. So it's not one of those things where he's going to serve the suspension when he's eligible to play again. No, he's just, you know, he gets to chill at home for a week.
Play more video games and yell at more things at people.
Yeah, just, you know, you've been quite vocal about this on the line. Wanted to get your thoughts and see if you had anything to say about this whole situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously disappointing. I think it's, you know, I don't want to talk too long about this, but I think it's pretty shameful what he said. I think there's some deep-seated stuff going on with him to even like, I've been talking about it on Twitter a little bit, and some of the responses I've gotten speak pretty, you know, some are kind of garbage, but some speak pretty eloquently about it. And the fact that he even knows that word, that's a word that a lot of people had no idea what it meant or anything about it. But the fact that he used it, that's like, I mean, clearly he does. Clearly he's, you know, it's not a foreign term to him, and it's really just, it is, like I said, it's disappointing. I think the lack of repercussions is the worst thing. We've seen a lot of this, or not a lot of this, but some of this over the last year or so. I mean, there was an incident with Steven Jackson, and really it's hard to toe the line between lack of, are just ignorance versus outright anti-Semitism, because to me, in a lot of cases, they're one and the same. I thought you and I talked a little bit about Julian Edelman's response, and you know, my perspective on what he said is, you know, the casual ignorance is absolutely what's most problematic here, because it perpetuates people saying these types of things and thinking it's okay, because it's not in any way. I think, you know, you said some really good things to me about how Edelman was probably a little too polite in his response, while saying some good and smart things about what Myers Leonard said. I think maybe letting him off a little bit too easy, as far as, you know, come over to my house for a Shabbat dinner. It's like, I mean, no, I'm not inviting Myers Leonard over for anything. And I think an incident is one thing. We saw, you know, you think back to the bubble, he stood during the anthem when all his teammates kneeled. It wouldn't have taken much for him to just be in the trenches with his teammates. So at some point you have to ask, is it a pattern? I don't know. It's a struggle for me, and the NBA's response to it is arguably even worse. I mean, it's not even a slap on the wrist is how I describe it. Cause it's 0.5% of his salary that they're fining him, which I think is the max they can. I'm not sure, you know, what the rules are around whether or not you can suspend with versus without pay, and I just don't know what the rules are there, but ultimately it just feels like it's all the same. It's just not taking this type of commentary, this type of anti-Semitism seriously. And so it's, I really don't know what else to say about it.
Yeah, look, I'm not in the business of trying to establish if there's a pattern with Myers Leonard and, you know, who he is at his core. That's none of my business. What's problematic to me is you see incidences like this time and time again, and Myers is clearly a pretty privileged person, and in my experience, that, like you said, this kind of gets shoved under the rug, and there, people like Myers are given continual benefit of the doubt over and over again. And everyone's experience is different. In my experience, it's never an isolated thing. It just isn't. But you know, we've said enough on this topic. Disappointing with how the NBA decided to handle it. Let's move on to the Pelicans, who are 15-21. Like the NBA's punishment, the Pelicans are disappointing. I suppose you can say that. And I just wanted to let's go through a couple key players on the team. Maybe we can probably go through the whole roster. And then as well as Griff, the front office and coaching. I want to get your takes on if the subject has met your expectations, exceeded your expectations, or has been a disappointment. You know, like, is it a surprise, a disappointment? Where are you at on these players and individuals? So we can just start right at the top. Let's start with David Griffin and work our way down the roster. We've had a year and a half of Griff, effectively. I mean, I'm not counting the long hiatus that's extended the time period everyone's been with the team, but like, as far as a working year and a half, we've had about a year and a half of Griff. Where are you at with him and his front office and the moves / vision they've shown?
Disappointed. I think, but disappointed relative to high expectations. So I think overall it's still incomplete. This is not something that was ever going to be just, you're not going to write the ship in a year. You trade Anthony Davis and Jrue Holiday in back-to-back seasons. You really, I mean, I looked at a chart. I think Kirk Goldsberry tweeted it out or put it on Instagram a day or two ago. And the Pelicans are actually, they have a better net rating right now than they had last year. So somehow they've been a lot healthier, but they've been, even if the record doesn't show it, they've been kind of on par with where they were last year. And arguably the talent level is similar. Obviously Zion's kind of been insane, but I mean, still, it, you know, you can say it's incomplete, but you can also look at what the individual moves that have been made and what the results have been, and you'd be less than pleased. I mean, his first draft looks, I mean, beyond Zion, looks not great right now. The move, the trades with AD and Jrue, I'm not gonna, you know, I feel like he maximized return. I still feel like he did a great job with those two moves. It's the other stuff. It's the other stuff that you start to question around the draft and around the players they brought back, whether it was, you know, Favors last year, Redick last year, and then obviously Bledsoe and Adams this year. I mean, it's so you think it's a means to an end. The question is, were they the right moves and was it the optimal moves to the situation? And so I don't think it was particularly, like, especially damaging. So that's why I'm saying ultimately I still have an incomplete. I'm not terribly upset about what Griff's done so far overall, but I think it is below expectations overall.
Yeah, I think when you have Brandon Ingram as an all-star, you have Zion Williamson, who was an all-star, selected all-star starter after an injury, the expectations are higher. You got these two great players supposedly, and your team sucks. And why does the team suck? Well, the roster sucks. Who built the roster? David Griffin and company built the roster. So yeah, from that standpoint, absolutely, it's been a disappointment. I really have one major complaint, and that was the Adams trade and move. That is it. I mean, everything else I don't think is deviating from what an average GM would do, or even I don't think there is necessarily a GM that would have done wildly different things out there. And maybe if your expectation is that David Griffin should be way better than all those GMs and it's a disappointment, that could be fair. That could be a fair expectation. But outside of the Adams trade, you know, from the draft, the draft is a crapshoot. With the information that was available at the time, you know, the process was, hey, with Jackson, we're going to select this long-term project who has an enormous amount of potential. All the analytic models are saying this guy is the real deal, right? And you could ding him on the process, be like, okay, well, you know, investing high first-round picks in bigs who can't shoot doesn't have a great track record. And you'd be fair to ding him there. But again, I think with how that draft was built up and with how it's kind of turned out, you see the redraft that John Hollinger did for The Athletic. You know, he had Nikhil as his 10th in a redraft. which is absolutely wild. And that kind of speaks to how crappy the draft class has been. And so, you know, it's been disappointing with N'Keal and Jackson so far. Definitely think it's incomplete. I think what will make that result complete is A, either, you know, you see who these players develop into for the Pelicans, or B, who they turn them into. What will eventually be disappointing, you know, what will solidify it as a failure is if he ends up moving off of them for, you know, let's say a second round pick, or ends up just cutting them or losing it for nothing. Those kind of moves will solidify that as a failure, which is very possible. It's within the realm of possibility. But it hasn't happened yet. So TBD on that. The Adams stuff just kills it for me, man. It's doubling down on on getting those non-shooting bigs and giving up a coveted asset for it. A first round pick, multiple second round picks, as well as the ability to stay flexible, not just by using the mid-level exception, but also flexibility this coming summer, flexibility with potentially moving George Hill for something or not. Just, you know, a litany of things. I think that was just a categorically bad decision. The process behind it, I get what they were trying to do. You know, they're trying to bring in a guy who would just stabilize for the next two or three years and be a cultural touchstone. I don't think it was worth all that. I think there is a necessity for those kind of players. I think you could have got it done at a much cheaper price. That's where I'm at with Adams. As far as everything else, I think it's just nitpicky. You know, I think a lot of people have already set their opinion in stone, and so it just leads to confirmation bias.
Whether you mean, like, we shouldn't go to trade in Langdon? We shouldn't just move on?
It's hilarious to me, man. It's fine. I mean, everyone's allowed to have their opinion, but it's funny to me when people so concretely have an opinion on something they know absolutely nothing about. They have absolutely no idea what's going on behind the scenes, or, you know, what the responsibilities are for each front office member. Everyone's welcome to an opinion. Have at it. But yeah, so I think, you know, like you said, it's incomplete with David Griffin. I think if you're a David Griffin fan, you're going to support all of his moves. You're going to defend the Adams trade and everything else he's done, or, you know, come up with excuses for, like, oh, well, you know, there's no better option, blah, blah, blah. I've heard them all. And if you're a David Griffin hater, then, you know, everything, drafting Kyra Lewis is enough to, you know, blow it up is enough to just crucify someone. And then look, like, now everyone's a big fan of Kyra. Okay. I think, you know, I think it's okay to say the Pelicans front office as a whole has not met expectations so far, but there is runway for them to meet them and exceed them. Fair?
Yeah, absolutely. I think even with the Adams move and how it kind of hasn't worked out the way that I'm sure Griffin envisioned so far, I think it has taught us not things that we, you know, that we would maybe otherwise wouldn't have learned about the rest of the roster. And how Adams, I think the hope was that he could at least help make the defense passable while contributing enough on offense while not shooting to help. And yeah, obviously the offense, even with him on the floor, has still been lights out. But the defense obviously has been a disaster despite Adams and everyone else mostly being healthy all year. And so we're learning how much more this team needs to be competent on defense. And that's a little scary, right?
I was going to go to Stan Van Gundy, but since you brought up Adams, we can go with him. You know, has he met expectations?
Well, we can go to Stan. I mean,
you've already opened the can of worms with Adams. Let's go.
Yeah. I mean, I think if there's a guy who has squarely met my expectations more than anyone else on this roster, it's Steven Adams. I mean, I don't think I ever expected him to be like an anchor by himself, but I thought there was more talent on the rest of the Pelicans roster defensively than they have shown this year. So, I mean, I think he's been exactly what I expected, as a guy who, can help open up, lanes for folks by setting hard screens, a guy who's going to, rebound the hell out of the ball on both ends of the floor and, or make space for other players to rebound the basketball. And then defensively, he's not the most mobile big, and he's not a high flyer who's going to block a ton of shots, but I think he's been a solid defender, interior defender, especially alongside a guy who's been bad, but slowly getting better in Zion Williamson. And so I'd say, yeah, it's good to start with Adams as the player, because I feel like he's the one who's maybe closest met my expectations.
Yeah, I'll go far as saying that it's been a total surprise to me how good the offense has been. And I think that he has been a significant contributor to that. He's been, I think, for the early part of the season, he was the Pelicans' third most important player. I think Lonzo has passed him up in that regard, or third most impactful player. I think Lonzo has passed him up in that regard. I also think that, Adams has been at least the fourth most important offensive player, and the offense isn't as efficient as they are right now without him. As like you mentioned, his screens, his offensive rebounding, his ability to spring Brandon Ingram open for a mid-range shot or any kind of shot at will. Pelicans offense relies on that a good amount, and he's a very positive contributor to it, despite John Hollinger claiming that you'll never be able to play Zion and Adams together, which is proven to be a completely ridiculous statement. I do think, as good as the offense is now, I'm not a believer in it should it come playoff time.
Agree. Yep.
It was Jason Commies who said this in our group chat. He's like, if you have an offense that they can shut down at will, then you don't really have a good offense. And that's kind of the case with the Pelicans. And it's hard for me to pin it all on Adams. It is a contributing factor, and it probably will be when teams decide to load up in the paint. But, if there is someone else other than Bledsoe, let's say there's a Bradley Beal in that spot, there's a Zach LaVine in that spot, all of a sudden Adams isn't the problem. And again, you have a viable offense with the weapons that you have. So yes, I think he can be a problem. Yes, I think that he clogs the paint. Right now, that part has not been any of the Pelicans' concern. I am disappointed in him defensively. I thought, I frankly thought it would be better. And again, it's not on him entirely. I thought that he would be able to at least cover for some stuff just because of his positional soundness, being in the right spot at the right time. And he's just not a deterrent. He's just not.
Yeah, I have a harder time putting that on him because I think, like I said, I had higher expectations for some of the other guys. Like, obviously, I didn't think Bledsoe was Drew, but I didn't think he'd be as bad as he has been defensively. And then, obviously, I was hoping Ingram would take a step forward, and he really hasn't done that on the defensive end. So I feel like it's been a heavy turnstile, and even Lonzo has been a plus defender for the Pelicans. And
you gotta stop going to different topics when we have a list to follow, Mason.
Sorry, man. There's with basketball. There's dependencies. It's not, there's dependencies. It's not baseball.
Okay. Well, shit, man. Okay. Let's back it up a little. Let's go to Stan. Let's go to Stan Van Gundy. Where are you at on him?
So I'm surprised, but it doesn't mean I'm not disappointed, and I'm not overly happy. I'm just kind of neutral. So he simultaneously has not met my expectations, but also overall he's performed about at the level I was hoping. Cause you come into this job, you've got 2.5 new starters. You've got no training or hardly any training camp, 2 preseason games. Just like, you don't have much time to like install a philosophy that is pretty systemically different than his predecessor. And that said, I feel like he's done a fairly decent job of adapting on the fly in certain cases. Zion is a perfect example, and really giving him the keys and letting him just kind of, I mean, do what he's doing at such a young age. I mean, I think, I'm not saying that was like some genius uncovering, but at the same time, he had to put him in that spot to give him that type of freedom to for the Pelicans to really unleash this offense that they've unleashed. But defensively, I mean, you can make a lot of complaints against how didn't you see this coming? How didn't you see the fact that, you know, 3-point shooting might be at the highest it's ever been because of various factors around, you know, is it because the stadiums are empty and there's no, you know, there's not a lot as many distractions and it's closer to shooting in an empty gym. I mean, there's clearly been a very large uptick in 3-point shooting this year. And I mean, that's kind of on them it's their job to see stuff like that coming. And so he wanted to double down on protecting the paint and trade off threes, and it hasn't worked out for them. And so he's tried to make some adjustments, but this team is just, the players aren't good defensively either. So it's been a huge issue. And the fact that despite pretty much full health from the team all year long, they're this bad defensively, it's not good. So I guess that's, I'll stop there and see where you want to go with it.
Yeah. So I will push back a little bit. One, you know, Stan's a 4-year process. It's what he was brought here for. He's brought here to be a teacher. He's brought here to build a culture, to install fundamentals. It's impossible to install fundamentals when you cannot practice. You can't. And so I don't blame him and the coaching staff on that front. And two, you know, you mentioned they should have seen things coming. And, you know, I actually asked Stan a few times while early in the year what the data was saying and how it was trending. And the thing is, they did look at that stuff. He was aware of where things were trending. And he was also cognizant of the fact that at that point we were 10, 12 games in, and it's difficult to say definitively this is a trend or this is just noise. And he's also adjusted his defensive philosophy, not philosophy, just scheme, multiple times from that point forward. They've tried multiple things. So they've tried in pick and roll defense, they've tried just simple basic drop. They've tried aggressively hedging and trapping the ball handlers. They've tried just being at the level of the screen. They've tried switching. They've tried zone. And during any game, you're going to see multiple of these strategies. And it goes back to the players on this roster just suck at defense, and they have no interest in defense, and they have no defensive accountability. And every post game stands out there saying these exact same things. And he's essentially telling the world, these guys don't give a shit about defense. They don't. And he's being so nice and polite about it. And then, you know, he throws himself under the bus, like saying like, oh, well, we as a coaching staff got to be better and better. But like, I feel for him because these players just suck. And then, you know, you could kind of like bring that up to David Griffin a little bit in that, you know, he should have known that these players suck. But again, that's all from the perspective of how competitive you expected the Pelicans to be this off season or this season. And, you know, in the off season, I had them at the 10th seed. I said that they were going to be a terrible defense. And, you know, pretty much that's come to fruition. They're the 11th seed. They're actually pretty far away from the 10th seed at the moment. Golden State is the 10th seed and they have a winning record. And the Pelicans are, you know, 15-21. So yeah, I'm actually more in Stan's corner than I thought I would be upon reflection. I do criticize some really dumb. Okay. It's tough for me to call it dumb. There are decisions that I've disagreed with. I disagree every time they pull Zion off the floor in crunch time. Every single time. That's terrible. That's a terrible process to me. And you know, I think this man just for whatever reason refuses to challenge calls, which I'm that's. that's a small nitpick. You know, that's one possession. But there have been multiple instances where he's kind of, outside of not challenging the calls, he's held on to a timeout instead of advancing the ball. And you're like, dude, what are you doing? This team has terrible situational awareness when the pressure is ramped up in the clutch time. When the game was on the line, this team has folded over and over again. That that's their mental capacity to execute in those situations is not very great. And you know, you're kind of giving them the freedom to try to inbound the ball instead of just advancing it. Like I feel like that's a situation where, you know, for the first, like the first time it happened, it should never happen again. It's kind of, it's happened multiple times.
Yeah. Speaking of that though, I think one last thing to talk about with Stan is, you know, what, anything to add around the minutes for the young guys versus playing the vets? I mean, I know this is not, maybe it's not just Stan, maybe there's, you know, there's urging from the front office to do certain things, and then Stan wants to do other things, but any strong opinions on some of the other decisions around like Nah and Kyra's minutes?
Yeah, those decisions I'll pin on Stan. I don't think that's the front office saying don't play those guys. In fact, mm-hmm. I think the front office wants to play those guys. JJ is magically sitting for the next 2 weeks until the trade deadline. He sat for three games. They're aggressively shopping Bledsoe and JJ. And you know, they were shopping Lonzo at one point, but you know, he counts as a young guy, so it doesn't matter. But I think David Griffin and front office would love nothing more to get that Kyra and Nikhil Alexander-Walker the minutes. I think Stan's an old school coach. He believes in earning those minutes. And I think where people have an issue is, well, how can you be earning those minutes when the guys in front of you, like you're losing games, you know, you're essentially losing games, and the guys in front of you aren't getting the job done. So why not try the other guys? Well, I think the disconnect there is that people have an issue with trying to win and losing. They just want you to either try to win and win or not try at all. Whereas the Pelicans, they're trying to win, they're just not succeeding. And so Stan is old school, in which one, he's going to rely on his vets. Two, there, you know, if you want to trade Eric Bledsoe, you cannot bench him. You just can't. Right. And they do take him out of games and give the young players run when he's been exceptionally bad. But that's just not going to happen on a regular basis. And two, I think there's also, we can talk about this in our Bledsoe segment, but I think there's a little bit too much whining about him. But you know, there's also this component of these guys, like Stan is like defense. And while Nikhil and Kyra are good at generating turnovers and stealing the ball, Kyra is like, he's like no resistance at the moment because of his slight frame. Everyone just goes through him. Nikhil, you know, he can be foul prone. And so those are situations where Stan just doesn't trust it. And at the same time, you know, when that's happening and Nikhil, it's not only defense, but it's also Nikhil is like a turnover machine, and Stan just deathly allergic to turnovers. So those are the factors that have contributed to those young players not getting minutes. And I think if those young players were better, they would get more minutes. Zion gets all the minutes. He's been given more freedom as he continues to show that what he can do. You know, they basically built the offense around Ingram for the first part of the season. He's been getting minutes. Lonzo's been given more and more and more freedom and minutes and responsibility. So, you know, the young players are still getting minutes. It's just that we want the young players who kind of suck at the moment to get more minutes, and Stan's like, nah, I'm not about that right now.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I feel like, you know, I understand the philosophy, and I think it's a little more, I think for me, it's a little more frustrating for Nikhil. Just thinking back to last season, I just like wish in hindsight, rather than giving all those fucking minutes to Frank Jackson, like I really wish they had just let Nikhil play. And now I feel like this year there's even more competition for guard minutes. And obviously that could change at the trade deadline, but I don't necessarily fault the inconsistent minutes, or you know, for those guys, for exactly the reasons you stated. I mean, you can't just bench Bledsoe, and I don't really think you should bench Bledsoe. But But yeah, I mean, I guess it's revisionist history, but not really, because we were both kind of clamoring for it at the time. Like, why the hell is Frank Jackson playing this much? Nikhil should be getting some
Frank
burn
Jackson
here.
Was a waste of everything, a waste of moving up to acquire him, a waste of every possession that he got on the floor.
But that one summer league, man, that one summer league.
Yeah, and preseason goat. He didn't even have one summer league. He had a game.
That's true.
He had a game where he scored 30 and then got injured three quarters in. Anywho, that's enough on Frank Jackson. But even last year with Etuan Moore on the team, management wanted to get the young player Nikhil more minutes. And, you know, there was reports on how, like, they basically quote unquote fought over or Etuan's minutes, right? And there was a report earlier this year. Stan and Griff disagreed on the minute allocation this year. And so, again, I don't think it's a Griff thing. I think it's a Stan thing, and Griff will have his back in the public eye. And I think it's just a healthy disagreement between GM and coach. Coach is trying to win games. GM's trying to look on the long term, and there's a balance, and they find it. I don't think it's anything surprising.
Life is too short to sleep between anything less than really nice sheets. But maybe you looked at some retailers and calculated the years of interest you pay on just one set and gave up. Trust me, go check out Brooklinen. So Brooklinen was started by Rich and Vicky, who also tried to find beautiful home essentials that didn't cost an arm and a leg. And when they couldn't, they founded Brooklinen as the first direct
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Consumer betting company. They work directly with manufacturers to make luxury available directly to you without the luxury level markups. Brooklinen has over 50,000 five-star reviews and counting. They are so confident you will love their products, they even offer a 365-day money-back guarantee. And Brooklinen is so much more than sheets. They've got comforters, pillows, towels, even loungewear, and more. Go to brooklinen.com and use promo code PELICAN to get $25 off when you spend $100 or more, plus free shipping. That's brooklinen.com. And enter promo code PELICAN to get $25 off when you spend $100 or more, plus free shipping. Brooklinen.com and use promo code PELICAN at checkout.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything. Which you obviously know since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
Enough on Stan, unless you had any more
comments.
Okay, enough on Stan. Let's work it down to the roster. Let's bring up Bledsoe. We talked about Adams. Let's talk about the other new addition in Eric Bledsoe. Where are you at on him?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say I probably didn't watch him as much as I could have when he was in Milwaukee, or at least as close of an eye. But you don't know when a player is going to end up on your squad. And so I guess, like I alluded to, very underwhelmed defensively. I think there's been a little bit more criticism around his effort than is warranted. I think it has been inconsistent at times. I do think that maybe he's not thrilled after playing on a title contender for the last couple of years to be in New Orleans on a meddling team. But it's not like he's God's gift to basketball either at this point in his career. So, I mean, first of all, I'd like to see a little more consistent effort on the defensive end, but I don't think it's as bad as some of the fans are making it out to be. Kind of like I don't know what you're referencing with the too much hate for Bledsoe. I agree generally, but I specifically probably am more focused on the effort, the criticisms he's gotten on that front. Offensively, he's more or less given me what I expected. early in the season before the point Zion, he was really the only other Pelicans player besides Ingram who could get to the rim with any sort of consistency. Not that he was terribly effective doing so, but also, but you know, you need to have that threat of penetration or else, you know, defenses can stop you pretty easily, or they can just load up on BI, and you kind of saw that sometimes. He's shooting the ball the best he's ever shot in his career from 3-point range. He's like 39% or so. And it's on pretty good volume too. So even if even if defenses aren't giving him a ton of respect, he's still making defenses pay from when he spots up. So that's good. So yeah, I mean, overall offensively, I think he's been a plus, albeit a small plus, but a plus player. And defensively, he just hasn't been good. And that's been the most disappointing part, because you need other plus defensive players alongside the rest of these guys. And obviously the impact down for the team as a whole has been very, very apparent.
Yeah. I don't agree with you on him being a plus player on offense. I think with the quality of looks, yeah, I think his drives don't accomplish anything anymore. He was an effective driver earlier in the season. It's become less frequent and less effective as the season has gone on. He's not finishing well at the rim. And, you know, again, part of this is the spacing issues. The Pelicans do have legitimate spacing issues, but, yep. You know, he has, he's with the quality of looks that he gets from three, you know, you insert like an average shooting guard, and I think they'll give you what he's giving you. And defensively, you know, I expected him to be a little bit more forceful at the point of attack. He hasn't been. I don't think he's been abjectly awful, but I don't think he's been a positive. I don't think he's been a positive defender, to say the least. And yeah. You know, a part of it is, I think in Milwaukee he had liberty to be more aggressive and gamble more with the back line there. And in this case, on the Pelicans, one, he doesn't have a back line presence like Giannis and Brooke Lopez, but also, the team is so bad rotationally and help-wise. There's so many holes to plug in that Bledsoe's just out of his element, and him trying to defend one player. I'm just disappointed that every time we go up against talented guards, and this applies to Lonzo as well, they just are met with no resistance whatsoever. Just none. And you know, Bledsoe has the lowest steal rate of his career by a significant amount. He averages, he's a 2.5% steal rate for his career. He's at 1.3 this season. And he has the second lowest block rate of his career. So, you know, there either his athleticism is waning or it's effort related, whatever it is. I don't think what I meant by I think he gets too much hate is he literally touches the ball and people start screaming at him on Twitter, and you're like, okay, just relax. You know,
He's not Drew Holiday.
Well, I mean, he isn't, and it's disappointing, and it's frustrating because Drew should have gotten those all defense nominations, not nominations, awards that Bledsoe got. But unfortunately, you know, Bledsoe is better than Kyra. He is better than Nikhil, and that's why Stan has a level of confidence in Bledsoe more so than he does with the young guys. And that's on David Griffin to sort out if he wants those young guys to play. Because being the old school coach that Stan is, Bledsoe's going to get his minutes. That's just the way I see it.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you feel like there's a playoff team Could Bledsoe help a playoff team? Not a contender, just a playoff team.
Sure. Yeah, I think there are a number of teams he would make better. Again, I think he's a rotation player. I'm not sure he's a starter you want. You know, what does he look like if he's a full-time bench guy and just played in small minutes to just go disrupt stuff on the bench? And kind of run that stuff. I don't know. Maybe he looks a lot better. I think he can help a number of teams. I think he could help Dallas. I think he could help the Clippers. Mm-hmm. I think he's decidedly better than Reggie Jackson.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe he can help the Bulls. Is he better than Elfrid Payton? It's possible. You know,
wait, the Knicks?
Sorry, the Knicks.
Yeah, I think so. The Knicks fans, man, they have something. They do not like Elfrid Payton for whatever reason. I haven't watched enough Knicks games, but
dude, Elfrid Payton is not good. He's not a good basketball player. And I know there's like fans of this podcast that are gonna be not happy hearing that because he's a local dude, but he's not good.
The triple doubles, man, in New Orleans.
I don't want to hear it. He's not a good basketball player, but yeah, I mean, I think there's the. Man, who am I thinking of? There's another team I feel like he can help. No, not Boston. Oh, the Magic. The Magic are just riddled with injury right now. And so if they want to pick up a guard, yeah, Bledsoe could help them.
They're 14th in the East.
They always want to try to make the playoffs.
Yeah, but
Aaron Gordon comes back. The East is. Look at the parity. Look how far they are from.
I know they're 3.5 back of 10th.
and how far is back 10 from like 4?
2.5.
Yeah,
it's insane. The Celtics are 19-17 at the fourth seed. Just incredible. That was a fun 1 year we had where the East was actually competent.
Right. So yeah, the East sucks. But yeah, enough.
What I'm saying.
Enough about Bledsoe. Yeah. Is there? I've been kind of picking the order now. Is there? You know, we've hit the main ones. We've hit some of the new additions. Are there players you want to cover?
Yeah. So we hit the two new guys, and so now, I mean, I guess. Yeah. I mean, let's go with the Laker trio. Which one do you want to start with?
Let's start with Hart.
All right. You want to go first? You want me to go first?
I'll go first. I think Hart is overrated. I'm going to just start with that. I think Hart's overrated. I think people overstate the importance of a sixth and seventh man on a 15-21 team. And I don't think there's anything unique about what he provides to basketball outside of his rebounding. And the vast majority of his rebounds aren't contested. He's doing the Westbrook thing where he's just stealing those rebounds. And people are boxing out for him. It's a contract year for him, so he's motivated to do that. He is a below-average offensive player. I do love his hustle. I do love his heart, no pun intended. I just don't think that stuff is worth paying $10-plus million a year for. You're never going to convince me of that. You know, I look at guys around the league that are either at the minimum or much cheaper at mid-level, at the mid-level salary that are as good, if not better than him. You know, I look at Royce O'Neal. I look at Justin Holiday. You know, the Rockets. I've always talked about the Rockets people who how they have. They found Jayshon Tate, who's a rookie, and he's significantly – I think he's either as good as Hart, if not better. I think he's a better defender than Hart. I think, you know, like David Nwaba was on the minimum, a little bit less talented than Hart, but – is it, you know, would you rather have Nwaba on the minimum or Hart for $12 million a year? And I think that answer is pretty easy for me. I think as a defender, Hart, again, he's effort. He's not very good at navigating screens. So he's kind of miscast as a stopper on this team where Pelicans just don't have one. And he's more gifted defending more physical players that like to kind of post up and be slow. But, you know, if he's trying to defend a high pick and roll, that's not Hart. That's not who he is. He doesn't have the lateral speed for that. He's going to die on that screen, and it's going to be that guard playing 2-on-1 against the Pelicans big, whoever's back there. So, yeah, I have a very, you know, if people talk about, oh, you should start Hart because Bledsoe sucks. Yeah, I'm not about that. You know, I think that, one, that makes the bench unit worse. Two, you got to consider what you want to pay Hart, and you want to pay him as a starter. And again, when this team gets better, is Hart your version of a starter, or would you like someone better there? And if you want someone better there and you're eventually going to replace him in a few months, why would you even just give him that starting spot? So, you know, Hart's perfectly fine. I don't think he's a tremendous needle mover.
Yeah. I mean, I think probably one of the worst kept secrets or best kept secrets on this Pelicans team is that Josh Hart's not a good three-point shooter. I mean, maybe that changes, but right now, I mean, he's 35% from his career, and that's just heavily weighted by a hot rookie year. He hasn't been above 35% in any year since then. I mean, he went 33.6, 34.2, and right now he's making one out of every three three-pointers. And so, like, the question is
worse than that. He passes up
so many.
So many open threes. So just that stupid pump fake and then drives into nothingness. Like, I get that it's a contract year and you're trying to save your percentages. Dog, take them open threes. It's maddening. You know, you give that same shot selection to Duncan Robinson. That dude is knocking down six threes a game on the Pelicans. Like, you know, like, and taking 15. You know, it's ridiculous, man. Hart is fine. I would love if the Pelicans were able to retain him at a reasonable price. And, you know, for the culture, for the bench and all of that, that's as far as I get.
Yeah. I mean, I do feel like at times he gets overrated because of, you know, the life. It's almost like the team, the energy from the team is so bad that Josh Hart seems like this God who comes in and just like can motivate his teammates. But like, why the hell is that what they need? First of all, I think that's a bigger issue, is the fact that Josh Hart makes the difference he does. Despite like all the things you said, like, I'm with you. I like Hart a lot. I like the fact that the things that he brings to this team, but it's kind of because no one else on the team brings it. And that's the frustrating part. So like, I think the effort's there. I think he's, you know, versatile enough offensively to be a good a solid backup guard. I don't really like, I would never dream of paying him starter guard money. So I'm so intrigued by his market this coming offseason, because I could see a team, like, all it takes is one, right? I could see one team talking themselves into Josh Hart for, you know, as a 3-and-D wing who can rebound. And like, the data doesn't really show that, but I could see a team talking themselves into it. And so, honestly, as the year has gone on, maybe that deal could scare me even a little bit more than Lonzo's. And so I want to ride this out with him. I'm not at all trying to trade Josh Hart. I want to see what the market.
Let him go get an offer sheet.
Yeah. Right. I don't think he's as critical of a glue guy for this team as other people might. But then again, like you said, it just ultimately comes down to cost here.
Yeah, I just remember, you know, like, people said all these same things about Kent Bazemore, and that dude got paid like $18 million a year and has done absolutely nothing since. And frankly, I don't think Hart is better than Kent Bazemore, who is on a minimum contract right now. And yeah, that's where I'm at. Is
better than Etuan?
If Etuan's at the minimum and Hart's at $12 million a year, I'd give me Etuan every single time. Etuan's just allergic to rebounding the ball, but at least he'll make threes.
I do feel like you sold his rebounding short. I don't think it's all like gift rebounds. I think he fights for some. I think he's like, maybe his rebounding numbers are overstated this year because it's what Steven Adams has helped him do on the rebounding front. But I do feel like he's a legitimately really good rebounder specifically for his position.
Okay. let me give you the stat here, and it's pretty hilarious. Hold on. Give me a second. The stupid stat site is...
This might be eye test driven, so I'm looking forward to this. It's
very slow. I've kind of tracked the Pelicans rebounding in general. So who do you think leads the Pelicans in contested rebounding percentage?
Zion.
No, it's Steven Adams. So he grabs the most contested rebounds, which kind of makes sense. People just throw.
Oh, sorry. I thought like I was saying like maybe percentage of total rebounds. So that's my mind went to Zion for that. But in terms of volume, I would have.
No, it's percentage of total rebounds.
Oh, okay. So actually, that is a little surprising to me. Okay.
Steven Adams is at 55.1% of his total rebounds are contested. What percentage do you think Josh Hart is at?
30?
Less than that.
How far off was I?
Not that far.
Okay.
He's at 27.3%.
Oh, okay.
Of his rebounds are contested. Okay. Now let's look.
How's that compared to guards? Other guards.
Lonzo is similarly low, and Ingram is similarly low. And you know the other guards just don't rebound. So yeah,
isn't that expected for guards in general, or no? Like what's the benchmark?
Sure. If you know you grab two of the rebounds a game, but you know if you're grabbing 7-8 rebounds a game like Hart is, you know, only two of his rebounds. So he averages how many rebounds per game? Hold on. He averages 7.3 rebounds per game. Only two of them are contested. That's pretty wild to me. A little bit. Hold on. I just want to stick with defensive rebounding. Just 1 second, and maybe it's a higher number, or maybe it's a lower number. I'm prepared to be surprised. No, yeah, only 23% of his defensive rebounds are contested. Which honestly, hold on. What I want to look at everyone who averages at least 7.3 rebounds per game, or actually he averages 6.3 defensive rebounds per game. And I want to look at their contested percentages. This is gonna
be fun. Are you pulling all positions or just
every guards? Single position?
That's not fair.
How many people average 6.3 rebounds per game though? Why would it not be fair? There's just not that many that average 6.3 rebounds per game. In fact, there's less than 50.
Is your position that he just hunts out rebounds and sacrifices on the defensive, just on defense to get rebounds?
My position is that his rebounds aren't really impactful to the team. That's my position. Actually,
I don't know. I'd argue that guards in general aren't that impactful when it comes to rebounding. So I think we're starting from a low bar here. So, and so I think
he just above average. That's fine. Rebound. I guess you can call him a guard, but I don't think he's a. I don't think he counts as a guard.
That's a bigger problem for the Pelicans than for
right. Anyway, we've spent too much time on guard. I don't think that he's. I like his rebounding. I don't think it's like, oh my goodness, like the Pelicans can't survive without it. To me, it's not who grabs the rebound that's important. It's as long as someone grabs it, and the system is very generous for him to grab it. Enough about Hart. Continuing on with the Laker trio, let's go to Lonzo, who's been a topic on a lot of pods. Where are you at with him?
I mean, I don't know how you can't be pleasantly surprised at where he's at, especially considering where he started the year. I think the biggest thing to me is that he's now doing what he needs to do in this offense and what he's honestly best at. I think he's doing like, he's not exposing him, his shortcomings as much. And he's just focusing on like the shit he does well offensively. I think finally it's paying dividends because his 3-point percentage has come around. He's obviously bricking a lot early in the season. Now he's up to like 39%, which is just incredible. Again, given where he started the first few weeks of the year,
he's made more threes than Trae Young.
he's shot a lot more, I would imagine.
I mean, he's shot more, he's made more, he has a higher percentage, all the above.
Yeah. I mean, but like Trae Young's actually isn't even kind of not good from 3-point range overall. Like his overall career 3-point percentage isn't as good as you'd expect.
Yeah, Trae's shot selection is terrible.
I think I've been happy offensively with him. I think he's with the structure of the Pelicans offense right now, he's doing exactly what they need him to do. And I think if he keeps this up, he becomes a guy that teams have to care about more from 3-point range, which I'm still not convinced that they care that much when Lonzo shoots.
On a Zion Williamson team, unless you are Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, Dame Lillard, and like, you know, select, you know, three or four more, I don't think anyone will care about who you are. They don't care about Brandon Ingram. So it's not a slight to Lonzo. They do not care about Brandon Ingram from three on a Zion Williamson team.
But they care about Miles Turner, right? They would care about
– right.
Yeah, okay. Anyway. So I think that the place I'm struggling is on the defensive end. I have no idea how to evaluate him. I feel like overall he's been good. I feel like he's also been disappointing from game to game, and you really don't know what you're going to get out of him on that end. Like we've talked about with Bledsoe, it could be a symptom of the overall defense being so bad. And if the rest of the defense can't be in the right place at the right time, you know, it's going to be tough for even a good defender to succeed. But as you talked about point of attack defense with Bledsoe, I mean, it extends to Lonzo too. Guards are just tearing the Pelicans to shreds in ways that we never saw over the last few years because of Jrue Holiday. And it really, I mean, not that you and I need to appreciate Jrue Holiday more, but it really helps you do that. And so, yeah, I just don't know. Like, I feel like, again, he's a plus defender overall, but he's not going to make an average defensive team good. He's just a complimentary piece from what I've seen this year. I don't know. I'm having trouble describing it, but what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think he has the abilities to be a plus defender on this team. He's not having a statistically plus impact. You're right. I don't think he's going to be a player that changes your defense. I think he can be a player. If you have a really good defensive team, he can elevate it. With kind of the versatility he brings, the
deflections and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. The deflections and all that as a point of attack defender, I think he's been flat out disappointing. I don't think he knows how to navigate screens. He dies on as many screens that Frank Jackson used to die on, which creates huge problems for the big. And again, like Bledsoe, pretty much every guard that they've put Lonzo on has let him up. And at some point you have to trust your eyes and be like, okay, like this is, you know, some of it's been good defense. Some of it's been guys hitting ridiculous shots. A lot of it has been guys being met with no resistance. And, you know, pretty much with everyone on the team, save for maybe Zion and maybe Hart, you know, Lonzo doesn't play with an edge. And I think as a defender, as a point of attack defender, you need an edge. You need a little bit of nasty. And Lonzo doesn't have that. Neither does 99% of this team. So it's not unique to him, and it's just emblematic of how bad the defense is as a whole. But, you know, I think, again, the Pelicans are putting, because they don't have a guy like Drew, because they don't have point of attack defenders, they're tasking guys like Bledsoe, and Bledsoe should be one. There really isn't an excuse for him. But they're tasking guys like Hart and Ball to be these stoppers up front, and those guys just can't get around screens. And, you know, on an island, they'll be fine. You know, if there's no screen, there's an island, they can hold their own. If there's, you know, like a lot of jab stepping going on, there's a lot of like dribbling, ball pounding going on. But the moment that screen comes, those guys are just out of it. They're out of the play. And that can't happen if you want to be a good defense.
Yep. Do you think you can have a top? I guess this is not really a fair question, because if you have the right type of interior defender, you can, but can Lonzo be your best perimeter defender and you have a legitimately good defense?
No, because if Lonzo's your best perimeter defender, then your other two perimeter spots are Zion and Ingram, and they're terrible. And then that leaves a spot for a guard. And the guard's not going to have that kind of impact. Maybe, okay, you're like, okay, well, you're sliding Lonzo 2 point to the point guard. And, you know, he's doing his transition point guard thing, and they're doing the half court thing with the other guys. And you're adding in a wing defender, you know, a 6'8 guy. I think that wing defender has to be your best defender for you to have a good defense, as well as, you know, you got to have a good defensive big. So no, I don't think Lonzo can be your best perimeter defender and you have a good defense. I see people saying like he should be an all defensive player. I just don't see it. I don't see it. But look, I think with Lonzo, again, the conversation always comes back to what's his next contract. And I think at this point, with how well he's played, how well he shot the ball, how well his numbers look on the surface, you know, his on-offs are really good. Those all-in-one stats are showing him as positives, as positive. Obviously, not all of them love him as much as RPM, the best stat in the world, who thinks he's a top 10 player. But, you know, like, you know, EPM has him pretty squarely positive, like right below Zion, and second on the team. And a lot of stats are showing like, hey, this guy is analytically good, right? His pick and roll numbers look good. So on the surface, this guy looks like he's about to get paid. He looks like, you know, teams can talk themselves into this guy can be our complementary piece next to our ball dominant star for the next 5 years. Why don't we go and give a massive offer sheet to lock that up for us? And if that's gonna, you know, there are so many teams with cap space and there are so many teams that he would fit on. Are you comfortable with a team just giving him 4 years at $22 million a year, $24 million a year, $25 million a year, all the way up to his max 28? Cause I think that's his market. 20, I'm going to start at as low as 20, which I think he's going to get much higher than that. And his market caps at his max, which is like 28.3 or whatever.
Man, that's Fred VanVleet money, man. No, thank you.
Fred VanVleet is that 20 range. That's that bottom range, that mid. I think there are many worlds where he gets offered 25 a year, which is 100 mil, 4 years, 100 mil.
First of all, thank you for doing that math for me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I know you can't do four times 25 a year that quickly.
I'm not in on that. And I know this isn't like, I guess we can kind of, we beat this topic to death a lot, but it's still like, I feel like every time Lonzo gets better, the issue for the Pelicans is that his contract goes up and it's a player's market this summer, full stop. I mean, like, there's a lot more cap space available than there is good players to be taking it. And so, you know, if this was a year ago, maybe our conversation's different. I don't know if it is, but this is a bad year to have restricted free agents. It really is. And so it's the crux of the issue is unchanged. It's, you know, is Lonzo Ball worth the amount that's going to be offered up by some team for him? And I am skeptical. And so that does not mean that either of us think Lonzo Ball is playing poorly. He's not. He's playing very well. But it's how far you need to maximize the dollars you have, and the Pelicans can't afford to make the mistakes. And I feel like one thing we haven't done is talked about the article you wrote. And I think it's especially topical to this subject. So it's a scary proposition for me.
Yeah. If you haven't read the article, the summary is don't Gary Harris it. Don't do it. Don't do it. The Nuggets in all their infinite wisdom, Gary Harris, you know, he averaged like 13 points a game, a couple rebounds, shot pretty well from three. He was in his third, he finished his third year. He was eligible for a rookie extension right before his restricted free agency. He had a year before he hit that. He's eligible for the rookie extension. They extended him at 4 years, $84 million. So about $21 million a year on average. You know, some of it was incentivized and whatnot, but you know, that's the round picture. Right. He completed his fourth year. He had a career year. So his fourth year would be equivalent to what Lonzo's in right now. Lonzo's having a career year. He had a career year. He had already received his extension. So there was no risk of like him hitting restricted free agency and getting more overpaid. He finished his fourth year, averaged 17 points a game, shot well from three, was good on defense. Basically, he's doing exactly what Lonzo does for the Pelicans, minus, you know, a few fancy lobs thrown. That summer where Gary Harris would have been a restricted free agent, but his deal was already locked in, the Nuggets were forced to attach multiple picks to get rid of Kenneth Faried, who they did the same thing with. They overpaid him. He's a good but not great player, and they were a terrible team while he was a good not great player, and they overpaid to keep him. When they paid Gary Harris, they were also a bad team, right? Here's the theme. bad teams paying to keep role players. When that happens, bad things happen. So that year, they attached multiple picks to move Kenneth Faried and Wilson Chandler because of what Gary Harris was costing them and on their cap. And then ever since then, you know, he's cost them Malik Beasley. He's cost them the Drew Holiday deal. And he's still on their books. He's making $21 million next year. And what I don't want to happen with the Pelicans is they're 15-21. They invest $25 million a year on quote unquote their third best player on a 15-21 team. And then by the time when they actually get good and they need to add wing defense, they need to add that stretch big, they need to add whatever, there's no money to do it because Lonzo's on the books. And I don't think in the perfectly realized version of the Pelicans and their contender, Lonzo's their third best player. I don't think that's the case.
Yeah. I'm nothing to add because I agree with everything you wrote. So I think most folks would probably guess that from our dialogues here. So it's a good article. There's more to it than that if you want to check it out on Bourbon Street Shots. But yeah, I just wanted to make sure we had time to plug that because it's, you know, it's good stuff.
Brandon, Mr. Brando.
Yeah. So we got, what do you think? Brandon, Zion, then wrap it. I mean, are there any other players you want to dig into? I really don't want to I guess we should talk about, do you want to do Kyra too or anyone else that's played enough minutes to warrant? Cause I'm not talking about Melly. You can't make me do it.
No, let's just wrap up our starters here.
All right. So BI. So again, it's hard to figure out what the right. Now, I mean, I guess if we're talking about this from the start of the season to now, I think he hasn't really shown. I haven't seen a tangible step forward in his game, and that doesn't mean he's been bad. I mean, he's been. I think he's been a really good player for the Pelicans this year, and he's really helped. He's been their true bailout guy. I mean, you need a guy who can get a bucket. Especially against good defenses later in games. And I know Zion's kind of taken on that role recently, but I think, you know, BI's got that multi-level game and that's something that's a nice asset to have offensively. I feel like also though, like what is he doing better this year than he did last year? I have a hard time pinpointing many things. And sure, that's
I'll
disappointing.
I'll tell you what he's doing better. He is creating more of his own shots. Quite drastically, in fact, and he has maintained his efficiency. So he's pretty much putting up the same numbers, but his shot selection has lent itself to a lot more creation on his part. And it's been a lot more difficult. His shot quality has gone down. And part of that is the roster construction that's forced him into, you know, as you said, being the bailout guy and taking difficult shots. And so for him to maintain his efficiency from last year where, you know, the vast majority of his threes were catch and shoot. And I think it's the opposite now, or at least the ratios trended in the opposite direction quite drastically. For him to maintain his efficiency, that's promising and important for a young wing. So I think there is tangible progress there. I think detractors will argue that his shot selection and shot making are a little bit unsustainable because he's doing them at a rate that he's never done so in his career, but he kind of did that the same thing the previous year. So, you know, it's held up so far, TBD, where what's going to happen in the future. And obviously, you know, part of that lends itself into the conversation where he's been disappointing in the fourth quarter in the crunch time. Mm-hmm. It is because he is taking those difficult shots, and those difficult shots become all that much harder when defenses are keying in on you and they know that the offense is going to go through you. Yep. I would like to see him offensively. Look, for me, I don't have concerns about Ingram offensively, long-term, short-term, any of that. I nitpick because he's a max level player and he wants to be treated as if he's the best, you know? And so if those are the bars that he set for himself, I will nitpick on those bars. I would like to see him on a roster that has a better playmaker that allows him to attack off the catch, attack in a more secondary role, and point Zion has enabled that a little bit. Yep. I would like it to enable it further by adding a legitimate point guard who can break down the defense and make things easier for Ingram and create more catch and shoot looks for him. And then obviously, you know, you'd like to see him in a little bit more spaced out roster and see what he can do there. And so I think that those nitpicks, those things will improve. I think the season started out where the offense was geared around him and he took a bunch of difficult shots, and it's kind of hard to walk that shot selection back midway through the year when point Zion becomes a thing and Zion becomes more and more ready to embrace a bigger offensive role. But I think as they practice more, which they haven't had much practice time, that pecking order will sort itself out. Not concerned. I am hugely concerned about his defense. Huge, huge, bigly. He's legitimately one of the worst defensive players in the league, period. Full stop. Like bottom 10th percentile, bad. Worse than Zion. And that is what drives me. Is Zion was awful to start the season. That was awful last year. He has made tangible improvements forward, both in effort and in execution. Ingram has done no such thing. And it is concerning. And I think it's fair to ask if he will ever be a non-liability, or if the Pelicans are just going to continually have to construct rosters that mask that. And I think if you are a max level player, you cannot be that bad defensively and expect to be on a good team with very, very rare exceptions. You got to be a top 1% offensive player, and he's not a top 1% offensive player.
Yeah. I think I'm with you offensively. I can't say I have any real concerns about his game. I think he's shown the versatility. And like you said, I mean, I've nitpicked about his shot selection and how much he's relying on the mid range at levels he never has in his career. Which, I mean, early on in his career, he was still taking some of those. And so the fact that he's kind of back to it is concerning. But like you said, there are other issues to that. I think he's not doing enough to, like you said, he's a max player. I think he's got to do a better job of not settling. That's not always easy, but I think it's not as difficult at sometimes as some folks make it out to be. And that's something he's got to get better at. But like you said, I feel like he's shown enough to his game offensively where I don't have any concerns about him there, especially as Zion grows as a facilitator and the roster kind of fits better. I think defensively that's the big concern. I mean, I laugh about the fact that like last year we had people seriously wondering if Zion and NBI could coexist on offense. And it's just like what a joke. I mean, that it's like evaluating off of such a small sample size and not taking a step back and looking at the player's skill sets. And once you do that, I think it's kind of, and now you can see obviously how crazy that was, but defensively it's a huge problem. And it's been you wrote about it, but the three things, you know, you were looking for this season. And what was that, number one or number two? What was it? Number one, right?
Number one was health. So that doesn't count, but it was number two.
Yeah. So it is a huge problem. And, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to parse out how much of the Pelicans' failures defensively or can be attributed to any single player, but I feel like it's fair to say that BI has been the biggest problem for this Pelicans team defensively. I'm as skeptical as you are about how much he can improve. I mean, I feel like you've got a guy. It's not like someone who's like a Kemba Walker or some guy who's just really too small to make an impact unless you're like Chris Paul.
He has a Kemba Walker level of impact on defense. That's the problem, right? Yeah. And you're like, okay, well, he's not too small. Let's discuss it in different defensive responsibilities. You put him on the ball at the point of attack, he's too slow. He's either too slow laterally or guys will go right through him. So you can't contain the shifty guards and bigger dudes will just brush him aside like it's no problem. Okay. You ask him to get over a screen, he can't do that. You put him in help situations, he doesn't rotate on time or frequently enough to make an impact. And so, you know, you put him at the nail, he's not going to dig. The dude has a 7'3 wingspan and has like the block and steal rates of like Etuan Moore. And I mean, he's been blocking more shots this year than normal, but like his steal rates are really poor. And one of the biggest commonalities that you'll see in star players is high steal rates, because it shows, and people say, and I'm not saying this is like a strong correlation or anything, but people say, you know, the high steal rates correlate well with stars because it indicates their ability to process the floor quickly and read and react off that stuff. And that's been my biggest gripe with Ingram, is beyond the physical inabilities, is I don't think he processes the floor on the defensive end quickly at all. I think it's just several beats slow, to where it's just, you know, you pick his matchup in fantasy, you're going to have a career night, like every night. And that's a problem. It's a huge problem.
Yeah. Do you see a long-term vision with this team? Like let's assume that Zion gets it to at least, like, he's a fine team defender, and like he's not world beating, but he's not going to sink you. Can you construct a good defense around BI in that scenario with Pelicans?
I don't know, and that's the biggest question that they will have to answer on the long term. I think they don't have to, you know, I'm not saying like, oh, I'm not pulling a Nate Jones and being like, yep, trade BI, can't do it. No, you know, but like there is going to be a point in the future, whether it's, you know, they've made the playoffs several times and they've come short because of defense, or they've just flat out been unable to make the playoffs, whatever it is, there's some point in the future, some theoretical future out there, where if it's just not working defensively, then you reevaluate if that's a pairing that can work. It's just, you know, they're not at that point yet. And there are lots of things that they can do roster construction wise to help mitigate that problem. Get a better defensive big, get better point of attack defenders, get a load up on the best help defenders in the league. Just all those guys that are great at tagging the roll man, rotating from the corner, you know, stunting from the weak side, just recognizing screens, get load up on all those guys. And then, you know, if your defense is still terrible, then yeah. Okay. Ask yourself, like, you know, at that point, my threshold for moving on from him would be like, okay, like you've had like multiple playoff series where he just gets picked on relentlessly and you just die because of it. And at that point you're like, okay, you can't get it done. And, you know, maybe there is a point where like the offense doesn't get it done or whatever. Like there can be other reasons why that partnership fails, but strictly speaking defensively, there are many steps they can take to figure things out before they got to make the Nate Jones decision of like, oh, let's just ship Ingram somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, fair enough. Okay. So one guy left, the guy.
Yeah.
Zion Williamson.
I got nothing to say on him. We had a whole ass podcast.
Yeah, it's true. We did. I forgot about that.
And he's awesome. And yeah, that is all I got to say about Zion.
Yeah. If you haven't checked out our prior podcast episode, I promise you none of it's dated. We spent a lot of podcasts just talking about how great Zion is. And you should check that out, because I don't really think there's anything material that's happened between now and then that would make us change anything that we've said about him, because if anything, it's just like the shot charts have gotten even more ridiculous since we last talked. Like the guy does not care who is at the rim, and he will score through you. And so, you know what, until he gives us something else to talk about that's even more exciting or concerning, I think we can leave it at go listen to our last podcast where we just raved about Zion for 30 minutes.
Zion! Yep. Well, yeah, I think that was a good recap of the starters and the team's decision makers, as well as the coach. I don't really feel, and we hit hard, you know, one key bench guy. But yeah, so I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast, and stay tuned for what's coming next with the Pelicans second half of the season.